Welcome to another episode of Spanish History 101, brought to you by Brian Spain Domain. We are at a crossroads, a major crossroads in Spanish history, though it's probably a period that not many people know about. It's known as the Sexenio Democrático, or the Democratic Six-Year Period. And it's a small stretch of time packed with a lot of activity, and it had a big effect on Spanish history. To give you a quick summary, basically in those 6 years, we go from a monarchy to a provisional government, a regency, an interregnum stage, while they look for a new king, and then they move on to a second period of monarchy under a new dynasty. And then they switch rather radically to a republic, that is, without a monarchy. And then they return to the restoration of the original dynasty, the Bourbons. And there was also a semi-civil war and a colonial war going on at the same time to boot. So it was a busy 6 years, to say the least. How did this all come about? Well, let's try to make this as understandable as possible. Up until 1868, which is the beginning of this period, the reigning queen was Isabel II, who had been proclaimed monarch when she was only 13, just a girl, and in many ways was never really suited for the job, which is sort of true of many monarchs in history, especially before these days when they are prepared or when they prepare them and train them from basically birth. In her case, it was a little bit more extreme because she didn't really have any control over things practically from the beginning. So she was being manipulated and taken advantage of, and she was sort of doing the same herself. Anyway, it has been said that during her reign, Spain went through a period of relative peace, at least on an international level, which isn't saying much if you ask me, because Spain was far from a superpower, or far from the superpower it used to be. So you'd sort of expect things to be pretty calm. But it was good that they were keeping out of any sort of international conflict if they could. That was something which had caused all sorts of problems over the centuries. At home, though, domestic politics were a different story. They were being run mainly by central, conservative, right-wing leading parties under the watchful eye of the army, which intervened whenever they felt that things were not going the way they should. These leaders had a lot of influence over Isabel, and she got involved in a way that was not in line with the times. On top of that, she had a lot of scandalous behavior, and that didn't help. Essentially, she was forced to marry her cousin, who was widely known to be gay, and so she found solace in the arms of many, many different lovers, some with political interests in mind, and so the anti-monarchist sentiment naturally accentuated this point here. Lots of gossip, lots of scandals. In addition to the parties I've just mentioned, there were other political forces, the progressives, who were a little bit more liberal thinking, and then there were Republicans. In this sense, I'm referring to the people who believed in a republic and not a monarchy. And then there were groups called like the Democrats, who were also interested in a more democratic form of government. So anyway, in 1866, these three groups, the progressives, the Republicans, and the Democrats, got together. They were outside of Spain, and they met in a city in Belgium called Ostend. And there they made a pact to basically get rid of Isabel, the Bourbon family as a whole, the monarchy altogether, and hopefully come up with a republic. Basically, they wanted a more modern form of government, and they wanted to modernize Spain and its economy. Anyway, a couple of years went by, and then in September 1868, while the queen was in the city of San Sebastian in the north of Spain, conveniently near the French border, I might add, a pronunciamiento was declared, I've talked about these before. These are basically coups d'états, sort of Spanish-style coups d'états. They don't necessarily involve a military takeover. Basically, a general comes in and says, we're going to do things differently. Then the army will give it support, at least sometimes. In Spain, these coups, these pronunciamientos were very common, shockingly common. But anyway, this one became known as the Glorious Revolution of 1868 and shouldn't be confused with the English Glorious Revolution of the 17th century. There were many people involved here, but the general most associated with this moment was a democratically minded individual named Juan Prim, Prim. After that moment took place, there was a battle, a small one, a minor one, to determine basically everyone's fate, and Isabel's supporters lost. So Queen Isabel darted across the border a few days later and headed for Paris, never to return to Spain. So that brought us to the next phase. We've gotten rid of the monarchy and the Bourbon dynasty, and now we are on to the next phase, which was to create a provisional government run by this General Prim and another general, Francisco Serrano. Among the many things that they organized, one was that they drew up a new constitution known as the Constitution of 1869, which was the most liberal to date. Its main points included the idea of national sovereignty. Also, it was a non-denominational concept. It believed in separation of powers, religious freedom. There was sort of a broad declarations of rights, freedom of press. Universal suffrage, I'm going to say that universal suffrage for the times. I don't really like to use that term until it's used the way it should be, because we are still talking about male suffrage and for those 25 and older. I don't like to use universal suffrage if we're talking about excluding anyone who should have had a right to vote. But anyway, that's sort of the idea. It was moving in that direction. In any event, even though many of these people were in favor of a republic, they soon realized that it seemed that most people preferred to have a king, a monarch there. And unfortunately, they couldn't count on the Bourbons anymore. So basically, what they did was go around Europe and look for a new king. They went to places like Portugal, to Italy, and to the north of Europe, to France even. And basically, all the candidates, for one reason or another, turned down the offer until finally the second son of Italy's King Victor Emmanuel, Amadeo, accepted. Now, Amadeo had never been groomed for that role, so he was sorely unfit to take on that position, especially in an extremely complex country like Spain at an extremely complex time like the 1860s and 1870s. But they went ahead with the plan, and Amadeo was elected king. Yes, you heard right, elected. The only time they've ever elected a king in November of 1870, and he got on a ship for Spain. His beginning could not have been worse. One of his biggest supporters, General Prim, the one who was sort of behind this whole plan, was mortally wounded in an assassination attempt just days before he arrived in Madrid to swear allegiance to the Constitution. This was a major blow to the Italian. Prim was his mentor, his sponsor, basically, and it was all gone. And the young king from a foreign country was left to face a Spain that was pretty much in turmoil, directionless. And not many people were happy about his presence. He lacked support from just about everyone for different reasons, but basically from everyone. You had independence movements that were on the rise in places like Catalonia and the Basque Country. You had Republicans who simply didn't want a monarch around. Then you had supporters traditional supporters of the Bourbon dynasty, who didn't like him because he wasn't a Bourbon. And then you had Carlistas, who were from the north of Spain for the most part, and they were supporting another man named Carlos, who they felt was the rightful heir to the throne. And they were particularly miffed when Prim completely ignored them when looking for a new king. Amadeo was even the target of an assassination attempt, which was sort of a fashionable way in those days to get rid of leaders. He was warned about it, but paid no attention, saying that if he worried about every threat to his life, he'd never leave the palace. That's probably a valid point, except for the fact in this case it was true, but he survived the attack. So, in addition to all this turmoil, all this confusion, all this opposition, Spain was also in a war, a colonial war in Cuba, which had started in 1868. It was known as the 10 Years' War, and it was supported mainly by Cuba's social and business elite seeking independence from Spain. It went on until 1878, so that was also keeping them busy. And as I mentioned before, the Carlists weren't happy, so a new war broke out there. This was the Third Carlist War, and that started in 1872 in the middle of his reign. It would eventually fail, but it was another distraction. Anyway, on February 10th, 1873, just a little over 2 years after he had arrived, he threw in the towel and said he was going to abdicate. Spain, he complained, could not be governed. And I think it's safe to say that at that time, it was a pretty accurate description of the political climate then. In fact, the events that followed his departure would pretty much prove him right. On the very next day, February 11th, which was also the day he left the palace, a republic was proclaimed for the first time in the history of this country, meaning the end of the monarchy. However, despite this new decision, the hope that something new would happen to Spain, the chaos of the previous years would almost pale in comparison. The First Republic of Spain would last just about 20 months until December 1874. And in certain ways, it really only lasted about 10 months, not even a full year, can you believe it? Because after that period, many of the rights that had been granted were restricted. There were four or five different prime ministers during that period, and the consensus is that the country almost completely fell apart. And part of the reason is that they just didn't know what kind of framework, what form of government they wanted for the country. And knowing the country's history, it wasn't easy to find the right formula. You had the Federalists who wanted to follow a model that was close to what the United States had. And then you had those who supported the Canton system, which is the one that exists in Switzerland. They supported even smaller areas as almost individual states, and no one could seem to agree on anything. For the first few months, the federal system was used. They had 17 states, but that was soon threatened by the more extreme political group which favor the Canton system, the Cantonism, which in some ways is sort of like anarchism in disguise. They were really wanted smaller regions, and they wanted a government that was basically hands-off. We're talking about cities that were declaring themselves as states and such. And for a few months there, it was chaotic. Eventually, the federal system and the cantonal system were put on hold. It was a true mess, and it sort of gave weight to Amadeo's assessment of the country. Anyway, in January of 1874, another general came in. His name was Pavia, and he led another coup d'etat to stop what he considered to be the madness. And then he named General Serrano, Francisco Serrano, who I was telling you about at the beginning. He sort of started this whole process, who returned as provisional president for the provisional government yet again, while they decided what to do. The Republic still existed, but it was basically a mere shadow of its former self. Then in December of that year, 1874, General Martinez Campos came in and, you guessed it, pulled another coup d'etat to put an end to the Republic, and he proposed that the Bourbon family return under the leadership of Isabel II's son, Alfonso, and he would become Alfonso XII. And that would begin the next period of Spanish history known as the Bourbon Restoration period. But that will be for another time. But there you have it, Serrano sort of beginning the whole thing. They got rid of the Bourbons, and 6 years later, they bring them back in after six crazy, crazy years. The intentions were good, but it seems as if the country just wasn't ready for it. Anyway, a lot of places, a lot of names, a lot of dates for you, especially a lot of names. In fact, I want to point this out, and I mentioned this, I think, in the previous podcast, is that it's sort of ironic that many of the names of some of Madrid's most famous streets are in honor of these individuals in history. We're talking Serrano, O'Donnell, Prim, Narváez, and others. Most of them were generals who took an active part in politics and on occasion had few qualms about intervening whenever things got out of hand. It is true that some were in favor of democratic setups, others less so, but if things didn't go to their liking, democracy was sort of parked on the side and they started over again and did things in a controlled, or rather a more controlling system. But they were important people from that period. Anyway, that'll be all for today. We hope you've enjoyed this podcast by Brian Spain Domain. Please leave us any questions or comments because we love the feedback. You can subscribe to our podcast on Spotify, Amazon, and Castos. You can also check us out on our YouTube channel and subscribe there. Or if you wish to support Brian Spain Domain, we'd greatly appreciate it. We work very hard to provide you with the best information about Spain, Spanish history, Spanish culture. You can do so by clicking on our PayPal donate button, or if you want to have access to absolutely all of our podcasts and support us regularly, you can check us out on Patreon at the link provided below. Stay well, stay safe, and hasta pronto.